those amendments to the amendments which have been proposed by the Oregon Medical Association. Do you have any objection to amending the amendments? Hearing none, they're so adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Staff, get that down.
I'll pass it to them.
Representative Maddox will pass it to you. Representative Bell?
I wanted to talk about the amendments, but you didn't hear me.
Well, I just amended the amendment, apparently, according to the chairman.
So the amendments are still in front of us?
Right.
Okay. Mr. Profit, I want to speak to
the amendments. The bill yet. We just amended the amendments.
All right, Mr. Chairman, do you want me to move that, and then Representative Bell could ask her questions?
That would be fine.
All right, Mr. Chairman, as amended, I move the OMA amendments to the bill.
Object to the amendments to the bill. Amending the bill with the amendments that's proposed by the OMA as amended. Hearing none, that's so adopted.
But Representative Bell had some questions.
Representative Bell.
I have a problem with the word shall in section 3, line 3, shall accept referrals. I don't believe that we should require this person to have to take referrals from the county health officer if their sole purpose is just to set up a little neighborhood clinic and take care of the indigent in some small neighborhood. I don't think, if you want to put may there, I could live with that, but I just think that we shouldn't be tying them into something they have to do. The time someone's retired, they want to do what they want to do, and we'll just be glad for whatever they'll do.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Maddox.
I move to change the shall to may.
So let's discuss this a little bit here. The reason, if you recall early on, and I'm not sure who was
agency
here.
Theory.
Yeah, the OMA suggested that we add the word only after accept. That's what the suggestion was from the proponents. Recall that?
I was out of the room at the time, but it's logical.
Okay, because in order to enjoy and be able to defend constitutionally without question that you're an agent of the state, you better be working for the state. The state, meaning, or the local government entity, that's the county health department that would be utilizing your services.
Mr. Chairman.
Semantics.
I withdraw the motion to change may shall to may, and instead would move to add the word only, shall only accept, and if I may explain that motion.
Go ahead.
That would take care of Representative Bell's, if she will listen to me, will take care of her concern, because if you say you accept referrals from the county health officer, I'll tell you how the doctor ought to do it. He ought to tell all his patients, please go down the street or call up the county health officer, and please, county health officer, just notify me that you will send those folks right down to me and on a referral. You just work it out so that it's clear that the county health officer has made a referral. You could send them a list every week for that matter. But that way you have linkage with state government, which would substantiate and support the agent of state government theory. And I could see why Mr. Cooney brought out that concern that you ought to have some linkage with state action to be able to be under the umbrella of state protection. Granted, it's not as independent, as free as Representative Bell, you might want it, but I'd say a physician who wants to be totally free and independent then ought to have insurance. Because the way we're working this out, the physician gets to turn to the Attorney General and to state government and say, hey, I'm being sued, I'm a volunteer, I got these referrals, would you please protect me and defend on them? And I think it's a fair trade-off. You may disagree with me, but I think that's a fair trade-off.
Right now, we're just limited. Now, you've got to be working for county health officer and accepting referrals before you even fall under the bill.
That's what I'm opposing.
I know. You'd like to loosen it up.
I believe that's going to just defeat the whole purpose of the bill. I mean, if I were a physician, the thing that I would like less than a busy, stressful private practice would be to be involved in a state agency.
Mr. Cooney, will you come up here, please? We'd love to have you on the spot. Mr. Cooney, this is in kind of, at least my understanding was, based on your testimony, that this is what we're just proposing to do here is kind of in line with your amendments and what you suggested yourself. Are we still on line with those? I mean, are we interpreting the bill properly, or is Representative Bell's direction?
Well, maybe it's a combination of both. I thought that we should add the word accept only referrals, and then perhaps we could say may accept only referrals. Because if he's going to fall outside the bill, he's going to have insurance. He won't be under this at all.
Why don't we leave only in there?
That's what I'm saying, yes.
And forget the may, but just put only accept.
All right, that'd be all right. Shall accept only.
Or just put and only accept referrals from said county health officer.
Yes.
That's what Representative Maddox suggested. This is the proponents. Ask him if you've got a problem with it.
You know, the reason you want these little clinics in a neighborhood with a doctor there is because there are families who are not going to go downtown to the agency. That if there's somebody on their street corner, they'll walk in the door and show them their kid and say, what do you think the problem is? And the goal here is to get more care to more people as safely as we can, I think.
Right.
And I believe that by tying them into the referral, it means that child somewhere is going to have somebody from that agency see them.
That's correct.
We've already got a backlog.
But unless we have that tie-in to the state agency or the county agency, we can't get the protection of the Tort Claims Act. And that's what we're trying to do, is to make available the protection in the cap of the Tort Claims Act of the $100,000 and the state indemnification if the physician does injure somebody. Now, if he's out there just in a private clinic, then you can't bring in the tort claims limitations without the referral system. And then he's just floating out there with no insurance, and the only limitation is that he is liable only if he commits wanton misconduct. And my advice to a physician in that circumstance is don't do it without insurance, and we defeat the whole thing.
Mr.
So the only reason for the tie-in with the county is to give the tort claims limitation.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, Representative Max, do you have a solution to this?
I think I have a solution. If we said, to the extent the physician treats any person upon referral from the county health officer, the physician shall be deemed an agent of the state. You want to be an agent of the state? Work out a referral with the county health officer. You want the liability protection, but you don't want to be an agent of the state? You don't have to deal with the county health officer, but you do have to register with the county health officer. In either event, you'd have to register, but accepting referrals would be, I'd like to be an agent of the state, I'd like to tie in, send me referrals. It would be to the extent the physician treats any person upon referral. So you could do both, too. You could be a HAVSI agent of the state on your referrals and a non-agent on your non-referrals. Then you get it both ways.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Bell.
I think I'm going under fast here, but I would sure like shall accept better than shall only accept.
Well, I'm going to clean it up here.
Let's leave the only out at least.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Representative Maddox.
I move to change the provisions in Section 3 to read, and Line 3 where it says officer in the county of the physician's residence, so it would read, and, comma, to the extent the physician treats any person upon referral from the county, said county health officer, comma, shall be deemed an agent of the state. To the motion?
Go ahead, Representative Maddox.
What that would say is you have to register. Now, to the extent that you treat patients on referral from the county health officer following your registration, you're an agent of the state. But if you choose to go off and be an independent operator and do your own thing, that's fine, too. You've registered. You can take patients anywhere you want, but you won't be an agent of the state, and you won't be subject to the Tort Claims Act. It's up to the physician's choice.
But will you still fall under Section 1?
Yes. Because all that we'd be requiring would be that you register to fall under Section 1, but in order to be covered by the Tort Claims Act, you would also have to only, well, to the extent you take patients under the Tort Claims Act registration and referral system, you're covered. If you didn't get a referral from the county health officer, you're not an agent of the state. So you can do it both ways or one or the other way.
But you have to have the medical continuing education.
I'm going to require that. My original motion requires that for all of them, and I'd leave that in. I'm not changing that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bell.
When we have dealt with this with other agencies, we based it on 50% of the financial support. I would like to see here that we don't make it any stricter than 50% of their patients, so they will see at least 50% or something, but let's not keep the kid who just walks in off the street without a referral out of that doctor's care. Let's leave a window where that one child will be covered, because most of that doctor's patients are maybe under the state agency.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Maddox.
In that other legislation, we were dealing with the definition of the overall practice, and there was a contract with state government Yes, I know we had a bill just last week where we dealt with that. We said if 50% of your business is under this contract, you can be deemed a state agent. Here, we're not talking about the load of business, how many cases you're doing in a year. It's easy enough to identify each patient as, was this patient referred by the county health officer, or was the patient not referred? I could have my, this allows much broader, actually, independence than the other legislation. But remember that the other legislation dealt only with people who had contracts with, I think it was vocational service providers working under state contracts, and you had identifiable way of looking at the whole business. I don't want to go into the physician's books and see whether or not is it his number of patients per year or his dollars per year. Do you include retirement income? I don't want to get into any of that. It's much easier to say this patient was on referral, this patient was not. And I'll add that it'll also be easier because in a minute I'm going to also move that there have to be a consent form that the patient be aware of that they're being provided with volunteer services with limited liability.
Okay, what's happening here is we're getting away from original bill, and we're also getting away from any kind of narrow focus that it may have started out upon. What I'd like to do is make sure that every member of the committee gets a chance to lay out what amendments they'd like to have for the bill, bring this thing back for a subsequent work session so we get a feel for it. Representative Evanson, do you have some you'd like to...
The amendment is somewhere at the end of line 6 on page 1. If the physician has fully explained and the patient has voluntarily consented to the limited liability allowed under this section, and I think that's strictly consumer protection.
Standard waivers they do now, but more than that?
Well, I think the standard exculpatory clauses are disfavored under Oregon law. However, because this is a statutory immunity, I think an exculpatory clause would be subject to sort of a challenge about whether it was even allowable. So I want to, I think that if we're going to deal with it in statute, we ought to deal with it all in statute.
Okay. Staff, you're taking good notes on this, aren't you? Sure we are. I want to make sure that we get all these concepts down and bring them back for work session after the members have time, and also after the OMA has had time to maybe condense what they would like to get through this thing, and the trial lawyers can maybe also plot there whatever needs to be done, whatever they can best massage this if it's going to move. I want to give folks a little more time to sort this thing out. Any further amendments on the table? Why don't we put the amendments on the table now to get all out of the system here. Representative Clark.
I would like some language in there that would require that a retired physician, in order to qualify for the liability limits of Section 1, would have to provide certification from the OMA that he or she has completed continuing medical requirements, education requirements.
A more stricter standard than Representative Mannix suggesting that the county officer be...
More of a stricter standard than that. I'd like to see two variations of that idea.
Okay. Any further comments from anyone before we close the work session on this? We're going to go ahead and close the work session with the instruction to staff to bring those back for a subsequent work session, and maybe we can get something out of this. Go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 2843. Open up a work session. I think Senate Bill 61 is ready to roll. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 61.
HJR 61 or something?
No.
I think it's Senate Bill 61 if my agenda is
correct.
I've
been here before.
We had some proposed amendments. Staff, why don't you bring us up to speed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 61. This is the second or third time we've had this bill scheduled. The bill, in its current form, simply makes a minor housekeeping change to ORS 41675 to make that statute comply with change in federal law. I discovered an error in the bill when it was originally passed from the Senate. In my correcting the error, I inadvertently lopped off a couple of words that I should not have. The last time the bill was scheduled, we had been requested to consider some additional amendments from the Health Division. That request has, at this point, been withdrawn. So the only amendment that you'll see at this point will restore the three words that I inadvertently took out in the A engrossed version of the bill. And at this point, I believe all parties are in agreement that the statute or the bill as it currently has been amended will get the job done in its proper form.
Representative, yes.
I'd move the amendments to Senate Bill 61.
A2 amendments?
The A2 amendments? Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion? Hearing none, so adopted.
Chairman.
Representative Mela.
Move Senate Bill 61 as amended to the floor or to the full pass recommendation.
Representative Miller moves Senate Bill 61 as amended to the full committee to do pass recommendation. We had some amendments that were requested by President Kitzhaber, but we've discovered staff. Why don't you put that on the record?
Yes. The Health Division and Senator Kitzhaber requested that the committee consider some additional amendments. I've been working with the Health Division and their Assistant Attorney General over the last several days on that, and the point where I finally figured out what we were trying to do, it became evident that that request was not within the relating to clause in the current version of Senate Bill 61, and I've informed the Health Division of that, and they withdrew the request.
Pretty narrow, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
very narrow.
Have you informed the President's office on that, too?
I am unsure whether the President has been informed, but Art Kyle was, and I'll make sure that he's aware of that.
Yeah. Why don't you do that, staff?
I'll do that.
Mr. Chair, if the Senate President needs a priority bill in the House, I have one left.
Well, that'd be nice if we could help him out with it.
I always am trying to, particularly where doctors are concerned.
Right, we want to take care of doctors wherever you find them, right? Whether they're legislators or otherwise.
Doesn't matter.
No wherever
discrimination.
He finds them, he takes
no discrimination.
Care of. That's right. Yeah. How do you hear that? He has agreement, too. Further discussion on this bill? Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Clark?
Yes.
Representative Edmondson?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Banks?
Aye.
Representative Miller?
Aye.
Representative Bell?
Yes.
Chair Baum?
Votes yes. Senate Bill 61 as amended, having received the appropriate majority of voters, forwarded to the full committee, due pass recommendation. Representative Edmondson, are you dying to carry this?
Representative Bell was
Representative Bell?
I was going to rest. Representative
wait a minute. Excuse me, Representative Bell.
Let me try that one again.
Yeah, Representative Edmondson says he'll back you up all the way to the wall.
I may need that.
Thank you. Close the work session, Senate Bill 61. We need to open up a public hearing on, golly, judging from the crowd. Oh, we got it. House Bill 3101. That must be why most people are here.
Yes.
But why don't we bring that proponents up?
3427. Get it out.
Do you want to do it out?
Whatever.
Gee, Charlie, we forgot to bring you up on Senate Bill 61.
The amendments that we were objecting to weren't proposed.
Okay, just want to make sure for the record. Charlie, we don't always do what you want. We want to give you full access to the process. We still love you in spite of it all, and I hope the reverse is the same. House Bill 3101.
Mr. Chair, don't ask too much.
I won't.
I was going to say, in spite of or despite?
No. In spite of. Oh, well, Daryl Gerritsen. Alvin Allen and Sergeant Tom Mason, we appreciate you folks waiting so patiently to come on up.
You guys got a heck of a team.
Same guy?
Yeah.
No.
Appreciate you patiently waiting around for an hour and a half while we talked about retired physicians.
Mr. Chairman, introduce myself. My name is Daryl Gerritsen. I'm Assistant Legal Counsel for Marion County. And we are, I suppose, party that requested the Representative Mannix to draft this bill.
Well, may I interrupt?
Representative Mannix, go ahead and interrupt if you want.
Normally, I would like to acknowledge that they requested it, but actually they didn't request it. I did it. It's all my own fault. But afterwards, I did it because of a case that they had that I read in the advance sheets. But I'll take the blame or the credit for this little baby all the way.
You better let staff bring us up to speed before we run off down the road here. I forgot about that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3101 relieves drivers of emergency vehicles from liability for actions of third parties unless the driver caused the injury by affirmative act beyond the pursuit or its continuation. As Representative Mannix indicated, this bill is in response to a 1989 Court of Appeals decision which involved an automobile accident in which a Marion County Sheriff's deputy was involved. The accident was caused by a individual who the sheriff was pursuing. That should be.
Thank you.
Actually, it was a 1990 Supreme Court case reversing the 1989 Court of Appeals case. And I introduce the individual on my left is Al Allen. He's the undersheriff for Marion County. He's here on behalf of both the Marion County Sheriff's Office and the Oregon Sheriff's Association. And on my right is Sergeant Mason of the Eugene Police Department. He's here on behalf of the City of Eugene.
We have the decision.
And with that, I would like to start off with telling you what this bill does initially. What this bill does is put Oregon back into where the law was prior to the 1990 Supreme Court decision. It essentially reinstates a prior Court of Appeals opinion called Jackson versus Olson, and it also would reemphasize the legislative policy contained in ORS 820-300 and ORS 820-320, I believe. And what that law was is that a police officer would not be liable for initiating a pursuit, nor would the police officer be liable for the continuation of that pursuit, so long as the police officer did not do something affirmatively in the manner of the pursuit to cause the law violator to hit the third person. Examples being roadblocks, channeling, nail strips, things of that nature. But the fact of its pursuit or its continuation was not a basis of liability. And, of course, the legislative policy, you state right in, it's either 820-300 or 820-320, that the police officer is privileged to violate the rules of the road so long as he operates his, I think it used to say it may be some generic pronoun now that I can't recall, but the police officer's vehicle with due regard for the safety of others. What happened in the Lorimore case is that the Supreme Court again affirmed that the decision to chase is a privileged decision, but its continuation under Fazzolari, and we all know what Fazzolari means, that means you get to a jury, under Fazzolari, the decision to continue the chase can be subject to liability. Now, the majority rule in the vast majority of the states of the United States is that the decision to chase or continue its chase is not an action upon which a police officer can be found liable. The Kansas court said it best when they said that we're not going to make the police the insurers of the actions of bad guys. They didn't use bad guys. They used law violators. I want to talk to you first about the impact of the case, and then I want to talk to you about the Lorimore case itself, and I want to talk to you about the impacts of the policy. But I would indicate to you what this statute does is give you an opportunity to make a policy choice, and that choice is whether or not you want police to apprehend law violators. Because when we talk about continuation, any plaintiff's lawyer can state a claim by saying that you continued the chase when it was unreasonable to do so. That nanosecond after you turned on your overhead lights, you immediately became unreasonable because you chose not to continue the claim or continue the chase. That provides a basis for a claim that can get you to a jury. That means we'll have an increase in litigation on this matter alone. I've already got a tort claim notice on a police pursuit that occurred about a month ago in which we turned on our overhead lights for a speeder. 15 seconds later, that speeder ran a red light and hit a person. I have a tort claim. Now, in that 15 seconds, my police officer was supposed to be making a decision whether or not he should continue this chase. I want to talk to you about a specific example of the impact of litigation on a public body. And I remind you, Marion County is self-insured. Most of the large police agencies in the state are self-insured. Obviously, if we spend money on our self-insurance program, we don't spend it providing services to poor people. We had a case called Maud versus Carroll's Group Home. And in Maud versus Carroll's Group Home, we had an individual who was on conditional release in the community who had been sentenced to the Psychiatric Security Review Board. That individual left his group home and went up to Portland, and he killed his mother. We tried the case for 8 days in Multnomah County, and the jury returned a verdict in favor of Marion County. This is a case we won. Our psychiatric caseworker, who had a reputation of one of the best psychiatric caseworkers in the state of Oregon, quit. She wasn't going to take the stress of the job coupled with the stress of litigation. Our psychiatrist, who had agreed to work at a substantially lesser rate, wasn't even named in the lawsuit, quit. said that what he considered pro bono, we felt we were paying him a fair wage, but he said it wasn't worth it to him to have that risk of exposure. And if you took a look at what happened at the state hospital, the Psychiatric Security Review Board quit putting people out in the street on conditional releases. And if you look at the forensic unit, it's full of Psychiatric Security Review Board people who may or may not be appropriate for conditional release, but the Psychiatric Security Review Board is not going to take that chance because they don't want to get sued again. That's an impact of litigation, and I submit to you that the Lorimore case is same impact is going to be that we will not pursue law violators, that it will be scaled back and scaled back and scaled back, and we won't chase them. And if that's the policy choice you want, that's fine. But this bill presents an opportunity for you to say, as a matter of public policy, we want to pursue law violators. Now, in the Lorimore case, a vehicle drove by our sheriff's deputy. It had an expired license plate. We turned on our overhead lights. The vehicle fled. The pursuit lasted 2 minutes, 50 seconds. And by pursuit, our police vehicle was behind the bad guy. The bad guy went through the four-way stop here at Fisher View and Sunny, Fisher and Sunny View, and T-boned the plaintiff. And the plaintiff was injured. She was significantly injured. When we apprehended Mr. Dimmitt, the driver, and of course he is indigent, that's why we get sued. Most bad guys tend to be indigent. We discovered a series of facts, which we will not be able to present to the jury, but among the facts we discovered was that the vehicle was stolen. Mr. Dimmitt was high as a kite on methamphetamines. The car was full of property that had been burgled just recently by Mr. Dimmitt, and he was in possession of a weapon. Mr. Dimmitt also had 2 felony warrants for failure to appear on narcotics or controlled substance charges. We also discovered that a month previous, Mr. Dimmitt had been pursued by our police officers. That particular pursuit was in the same general region, except it was on the other side of Lancaster. That when Mr. Dimmitt drove through Lancaster or across Lancaster on a red light, we discontinued the pursuit. The police officer felt it was too dangerous to continue the pursuit. That didn't apparently matter to Mr. Dimmitt because not only did he blow the four-way stop at Fisher View and Sunny, but he went on down and we subsequently found the vehicle he was in up against the fence near the state fairgrounds.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Maddox.
I'm going to try to focus this because I need to tell you that we're going to be running out of time because family justice comes on, and I do want our other 2 witnesses to have a chance to speak to this bill. But basically what you're coming down to on the law side is the Supreme Court decision has said that there can be a cause of action against the driver of the emergency vehicle if a third person who's being pursued or involved in this situation violates the law and injures somebody. And that, in effect, government is being made liable for the actions of this third person.
That's right.
What this bill is designed to say. No, government is not liable for those actions unless there was something, some affirmative act beyond a pursuit or its continuation that we did to cause this accident.
That's correct. And that's okay. Because with the reinstatement of the foreseeability test under Fazzolari, I would be hard-pressed to argue it was not foreseeable that somebody who is already violating the rules of the road is not going to be involved in an accident if we chase them.
Now, if we could have the law enforcement day-to-day professionals.
I just got one more zinger right. I want to throw at it. I'll quit. The parade of horribles that will be brought up to the trial lawyers, by the trial lawyers, I'm sure, is the crosswalk full of school children, and we initiate a chase in a school zone, and all of a sudden we have 20 dead kindergartners, and the police should pay for that. Well, first thing I want to say in response to that parade of horribles is we have professional police officers. That's never happened in the state of Oregon, and I'm not sure it's ever happened anywhere in this country. The second thing is, if you want to talk about victims, when we didn't catch Rocky Allen Dimmitt 30 days prior to this accident, how many more victims were there? Mr. Dimmitt was going to continue on his criminal spree, and he was going to continue to create victims, and he was going to continue to deal drugs until we caught him. And those are poor people, too, and crime victims do have some rights, and among the rights they have is the right to have the criminal apprehended.
Thank you, gentlemen. We need to be going about 3, so you got about 2 minutes apiece. Great timing. We can bring it back. We'll have another hearing on this to bring up Mr. Williamson and folks. So, but Family Therapy Committee starts in about 15 minutes.
Chairperson Bond and members of the committee, my name is Al Allen. I'm with the Marion County Sheriff's Office. I'm the undersheriff there. I would say that I'm here in support of the bill for not only the Marion County but the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. And I think Mr. Garrison pretty well covered the areas that are of my concern, and I would turn the mic over to a constituent from Eugene.
Thank you.
Chairman Baum and members
What's
of the
committee. What's your name again? Committee. Say it loudly.
Tom Mason.
Okay. That's good. Different, quite different than the Tom Mason we're used to dealing with.
That's correct. I'm a sergeant from the city of Eugene. I'm here to represent the concerns that the city has. And as has been said, law enforcement in general throughout the state and the country regarding motor vehicle pursuits. I coordinate and present training for the police officers for our department, and also I am a contract instructor with the Board on Police Standards and Training for emergency vehicle operations instruction, and have been involved with that program for about the past 6 years.